listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to today's LA Talk Radio show, Your Ultimate Life, the show dedicated to helping you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy by using the gifts, experience, talents, and stuff that you've accumulated in your life. I'm excited today because I have a fun guest who I've known for a number of years, David Schreiner Kahn, who has created a community of corporate refugees, he called them. I love it. David, I'm not going to pretend to tell everybody all the cool stuff that you've done. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kellen. Thanks for inviting me.
You're just welcome. So we're no strangers to each other. We've known each other for several years. The first thing I'd like to ask is for you to share, not modestly, but just share what you are doing right now to, the phrase I use is, add good to the world. What are you doing to add good to the world?
Well, Kellen, I believe that when you, first of all, I believe that every individual has gifts, every team has gifts, and every organization has gifts. When you share your gifts, the world prospers. So I am on a mission to empower corporate refugees in particular to share their gifts with one another so that collectively they will all prosper in their own individual businesses.
We'll talk a little bit more about how that works. So corporate refugees, they've accumulated a wealth of experience, decades sometimes of experience. And now they want to share that in a different way, not in some corporate structure. So give me a couple of examples of how, as I know you've worked with many, but how someone might do that kind of thing. So people listening can like, oh yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So, I'll give you the scenario. Someone who has been a high achieving professional, typically somewhere between 20 and 40 years. They work hard, they've done well, they have gotten to a point where, in spite of the fact that they have an overflowing inbox, a full calendar, team of people around them to take care of all the things that they're not responsible for, and this built-in social structure of the team, they get to a point where either they're feeling a little burnt out, they have plateaued in their career, or perhaps something has happened that has nothing to do with their performance, some external factor like a merger, an acquisition, a market downturn in the industry that the company that they work for is in. And they either leave voluntarily or they get pushed out. And they realize that they have all this experience. They have these skills. They love what they do. They have relationships. And they go out on their own, most commonly as a solo consultant or maybe as a coach or some combination. And they start off with an empty calendar, empty inbox, no team. They're spending all this time alone. And then they have to do something they've never done before, which is they have to get up every day and sell something they've never sold before, namely themselves. And I don't care who you are and how much experience you have marketing and selling. If you have experience marketing and selling the company that gives you a paycheck, it's a very different feeling than marketing and selling yourself. So that right in and of itself, that's sort of the scenario day one.
I love that. And that, I mean, I did that in 2007. I left 30 years of a career and I didn't have any idea what I was going to do. And my exit was dramatic, partly fueled by personal stuff and everything, but it was that thing. And as you start trying to figure out what you're going to do, it is a different feeling. And it is a different thing about selling yourself instead of kind of that thing over there that you've been used to talking about and doing. You've described the scenario really well. And I want to dig into David a little bit. Why are you doing this? Like, what is there in your heart that says this is how you want to make a difference now at this stage in your life, is by inviting, supporting, teaching, collecting these people that fit that scenario. Why?
Yeah, well, no surprise, the scenario describes my story. I was in corporate, and I'll describe what that means, what corporate meant to me. I was in corporate for the first 28 years of my career. I trained as an engineer. I have a master's in chemical engineering. My first two jobs were as an engineer. Just after my second annual review in my second job, where I got not only a strong performance review, but also a nice raise, a month later, my boss called me into his office and he said, "David, I have good news and bad news. The good news is you're doing a great job. The bad news is you don't have a job here anymore." So no surprise, I was young and I was trained as an engineer. I wasn't trained in business. I didn't really focus on the business. I focused on solving engineering problems. And I didn't pay attention to the fact that the company that I worked for had lost a lot of contracts. And suddenly they ended up laying off something like half the staff. So I was out on the street. I was, to say that I was disheartened is kind of an understatement. And I did a lot of soul searching then and looked ahead at my career and thought to myself, I don't know that I want to be in the same kind of situation when I'm in my 50s or older. Maybe there's a better way to make a living. And I had actually thought about entrepreneurship at that point. I didn't know anybody who was an entrepreneur, didn't grow up in a family of entrepreneurs. I really had like not the slightest idea how that would even work. So long story short, I ended up just changing fields and I went into the nonprofit sector, where I thought that perhaps the employer-employee relationship might be a little less a little less just about the dollars and cents. And so I worked in the nonprofit sector for the next 23 years, and it was a good run. And I was in management and leadership roles the entire time, had several different jobs. And that that earlier experience of needing to make that sudden shift was something that stayed with me. And I always knew that it was important to have a plan B. And I also knew that I really wanted more control over my career destiny. And I thought to myself, well, I really want to try this entrepreneurship thing. Along the way, I had gotten to know many people who are entrepreneurs and thought, okay, I think I can do this too. So when the next transition came along, which was after 18 years in the same job, when I felt a similar fate, again, this was not a performance issue, but there was a new CEO in my organization who I reported to, and we had some overlap in skills. So it was no surprise to me that not that long after he came on board, I was offboarded. And I thought, okay, this is my, both the world is telling me something, and this is my opportunity to leave what I describe as being corporate, because you're in an organizational setting, and do my thing as an independent consultant.
So that situation came along. You were offered the opportunity to go explore those alternatives, and you took it, and you didn't go look for another job. So what was you, when you talk about plan B, what was your plan B? How well formulated was it? How did you step into it? Because I suspect, you know, we're post-pandemic now. The world is changing. Jobs are changing. People don't want to go back to work. You know, the whole landscape of what we think of job freelancing is wildly on the rise. I've got a client. That's all he does is teach people like me and you that are exiting careers how to go on Upwork and other freelance careers and make a living. So what did you do to start your plan B?
Yeah, it's certainly very different today than it was when I left my last job in 2006, which was around the same time you left yours. Mm-hmm. So, right. So we share that. And My plan B was I would be a nonprofit management consultant. That was what I knew best. And actually it worked pretty well in the beginning. I got clients, I had a pretty good business, and I didn't really have any plans to expand or create something beyond the business being me at that point. In spite of the fact that I was off to a good start, there were a few different things that happened along the way that really have led me to where I am now and who I feel compelled to serve.
So what happened? You started a good business. You did what you knew, which is what you said a lot of people do. They go into consulting based on what they've known. And then something else happened. It pivoted again for you. You talked before we started about hundreds or even thousands of tiny pivots. One of the things I think scares people is they have an idea about what is going to happen, and then none of it comes true. And there are all these pivots that happen all over the place. So I'm going to invite you to talk a little bit about some of those pivots, not just factually what happened, but what happened inside of you, the fears, the worries, where you found support so that you could not only deal with the pivots, but then, you know, create something even when things were difficult.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example of one that involved both, both fear and support simultaneously. So, this was probably a year or maybe a little more after I started my business. A friend of mine who had a similar trajectory, long career in corporate, left. She went out on her own. She said, "You know, David, I'm part of this organization. I think you might find it beneficial. Why don't you come visit?" Right? It was a business networking group. And I knew nothing about business networking. But I walked into the room and I saw 30 some odd people, very early in the morning with a lot of energy, all trying to support one another. And the structure was everybody got up and had 60 seconds to give a commercial. Well, I had never given a commercial. I was clueless about what to say. So talk about fear. All not only the members, but all the guests needed to get up and give a little pitch. So I had to get up and give a pitch. I don't really recall how awful it was, but I do recall that I was quite anxious about the whole thing. And I ended up coming back to visit a second time. Then I joined. And a bunch of those people became some of my best friends as entrepreneurs. And we're still friends today. And we still do business. So yes, there was a lot of fear in sort of starting this new track. I learned how to do business networking. I learned how to get up and give a commercial. And I also made new friends and got support.
When people go through these kinds of difficult transitions, that support is critical, but it's also really important to, like, you know, start to create clients. One of the things you talked about in the beginning that I resonate with and agree with is how difficult it is to talk about something talk about yourself when you're selling yourself as a consultant or coach or whatever. What kinds of things have to happen so that I can get past that fear when the spotlight is on me, so I can manage it, overcome it, learn some new framework? Like, what has to happen to make that work?
Well, one thing that you can do is to think about a story of how you have helped somebody else and just talk about the person that you've helped. Like, where were they before your intervention and where were they after your intervention? And then say, if you want to learn more about this situation, here's how you can get in touch with me and we can talk.
That's actually a really good idea. What do you do? Like, what did you do? I'm familiar with the sort of commercial kind of thing and that kind of networking. What did you do to learn to talk about yourself, to describe your business, your offering, your opportunity in 60 seconds or some other short period of time, elevator pitch style? What did you do to get that learned?
I just kept trying. Every week I had another opportunity to do the same thing. And sometimes they were pretty awful and sometimes they were not so bad.
What does it look like to you as you think about this exodus? Like, we've had the baby boomers all now mostly retired or retiring very quickly. And, you know, we're seeing not only the generational shifts, but the societal shifts about work. Like, talk about what work looks like from your perspective of being in corporate, being on your own, and now facilitating entrepreneurs making that shift. What would you say to people about what work looks like?
So I would say this I think was true before, and it's even more true now, which is you need to be clear with yourself what it is you really love to do, what it is you're really the most competent at doing, whom you want to serve, and what kinds of problems you can solve for them. And in addition to what kinds of problems you can solve for them, what is it that they want you to solve for them and that they're willing to pay you to solve for them? And I don't care whether you end up in a very structured job situation, whether you're doing this as an entrepreneur, whether you're the CEO of an organization, a CEO of an organization of one, or you are one person working in some fashion with others. I think the more you can own that whole equation, the better off you're going to be in not only taking control of your career, but being satisfied with where you are in your career journey.
So I love that, and I agree with it 100%. As a coach, I see the same kinds of things. I'm going to ask sort of an obvious question, is why the flip is that so hard? Because people struggle with articulating clearly what they offer, who they help, you know, that kind of thing. Why is that so hard for people to learn to do?
Well, there are a few reasons. One is the things that are easiest for us to do, we tend to discount. You know, for example, I have a good sense of direction. If I go from point A to point B once, very often 2 years later, I can follow the same exact route without a problem. But if you ask me to remember the details of a movie I saw 2 weeks ago, my mind goes blank. Now, I don't know what it is about my makeup that one of these things works really well and one doesn't. But I tend to assume that everybody can get from point A to point B and they don't have trouble finding their way. But it's not true, right? But it took me a long time to realize that that's something that maybe it's a gift that I have for whatever reason. But for other people, it's hard. So I think we tend to discount what we're really good at. Second thing is, unless you ask other people what they notice about you, you may be totally off base. And I know that this was hard for me to do when I first started my business, but I would constantly ask for feedback from clients and people that had experience working with me. And after asking a lot of times, I started to see a pattern. And I see things that I hadn't really thought of as being important skills. So I think it's hard to be objective about yourself. And I think we tend to discount where we are most valuable.
Well, that's wonderful to say that, because I agree with both those things. We do discount things that we can do naturally. And I have funny stories to tell about that. This isn't my show, so I won't tell them now. But, and also we have this whole inability, like you described, to see ourselves objectively, which is of course the value of having some kind of a mentor or community where you can do that. When you and I first met a few years ago, you were doing some podcasting and you hadn't yet created the community that you have now. Tell me about that journey, about why you did the podcast, how you collected this, and what drove you to create this community that you now have that's vibrant and that supports this kind of transition.
Sure. So one of the things that I that I saw other consultants doing that I wasn't doing much earlier in my business was creating content. And so initially I started first a blog, and then we got some feedback from our audience about what they liked about the blog, what they didn't like about the blog, what they wanted more of. And we were creating a fair amount of content through the blog early on. Initially it was two posts a week, and then we went to five posts a week, which was a lot more than most people that had blogs were doing. But the feedback we got was people wanted greater depth in the content. And so we decided to try audio interviews. And 10 years ago, the whole podcasting and like what you and I are doing now, that it was very different. But it turned out that it actually worked pretty well, and I like doing it. So I continued to do it. Along the way, here's one of the unexpected pivots. I was approached more and more by solopreneurs for help with their businesses. And so my business became more focused on working with consultants and coaches, as opposed to working with nonprofit organizations and small businesses. And simultaneously, my audience and network through the podcast was also mostly consultants, coaches, and other kinds of solopreneur service businesses. So in terms of my interaction with entrepreneurs, it became much more focused on the same kind of journey that I had had. And so I became not only much more knowledgeable about what the what worked best in these kinds of businesses, but that also became all of my connections. And in my own experience, what I have found works really well is when you are, you know, we talked about how it's hard for you to recognize your value yourself, why mm-hmm. it's important to have others give you some feedback. Right. So, right, if you're doing this in some kind of group setting, whether it's a small group or a community, where the culture that is established for the group or for the community is one of being a safe space where people can give honest and helpful feedback to one another, that can be very powerful. And I've seen with the clients that we've worked with, both in group format before we started the community and subsequent to the launch of the community 2 years ago, I've seen some powerful things happen. So, you know, for example, members that charge too little for their services. And there's, you know, I'm sure you probably have lots of experience with this as well, right? As a coach, where consultants and coaches in particular often charge too little for the value that they provide to their clients. But if you start letting your hair down and talking about what the opportunities are before you and what you're thinking about proposing and how much you're thinking about charging, you will hear quickly, and I've seen this happen with our members, they hear from other members about, you know, maybe they're charging too little. Maybe they should be asking for more. Here are some negotiation tips. Here are different ways you could structure the deal. Here are some different business models you might be able to utilize with a prospect. And so that kind of feedback is invaluable. And in particular, if you're able to get it from multiple people around a single problem, it can be very empowering and can really propel your business forward. And you can make a lot more money as a result, and not kill yourself in the process.
I love that. And I want to talk for a minute about that seemingly endemic problem of consultants, coaches charging too little. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that, but I want you to tell me, you've got this community, You have worked as a consultant. You've worked with consultants and coaches. You've accumulated a group around you of people that are making that transition or have made it. Why is it that the first inclination and the second and third and fourth and maybe the 10th is to not evaluate well what the services you provide are worth? And I'm not talking about just making up some big number. Why do we do that? Why is that so difficult for coaches, consultants, and others to figure out what it's really worth? That's part one of the question. Right. Why is it so hard to figure that out?
Well, there are a few reasons, but one is, I think most people, when they're thinking about any kind of interaction, it is very common to think about yourself first. And if you have bills to pay, like most of us do, and you have a prospect before you, it's pretty natural to think about, okay, well, if this goes through and we're able to make a deal, it's going to make it easier for me to pay my monthly expenses and support my lifestyle. And if you really want to understand what the value is that you're bringing to this relationship, you need to put yourself in the client's shoes and not think about yourself. It's not so easy to do. And the client is thinking, okay, if I make an investment in Kellan or I make an investment in David, what kind of return on investment am I going to get? And you know, if the client can get 4 or 5 times return on investment, that's a great deal, right? So if you're going into a consulting relationship where you're going to increase the bottom line of the client by $1 million, if you're charging $10,000 for that engagement, you're probably charging too little.
I agree with you. And you've said something really key that it makes me want to repeat it. And that is, we get in, and you know, the favorite phrase is we're always getting in our own way. And in this case, getting in your own way is, oh, I'll be able to pay rent this month, or I'll be able to, you know, take that vacation or do whatever it is. So I better not screw this up. I better close this deal. And we think the ticket to closing the deal has to do with the price that we're charging, when it has very little to do with that. And it has to do with what you said, which is the demonstration of value for the prospect, where they can see a return that's a substantial number, and you're charging a fraction of that to help them get that return. Why is it so hard for us to get our own feelings, to get out of the equation? Like, what? I mean, this is common. Every coach, every consultant in the world, until they learn not to, why is it so hard to remove the ego, the want, and just to get out of this thing? Why is that so hard?
Because we're human. I think it's natural to think about what we need first. And honestly, if we don't think about what we need, how are we going to survive?
So, okay, I'm not going to take issue with that. We can have a long discussion about that. But
so it can land much better in a prospect's lap if the focus is on the client or the prospect rather than on the person that's selling the job.
Well, I love that. And, you know, speaking of pivots, so let's pivot. We got interrupted and we'll pivot now. So as you think about growing this community and taking the opportunity to serve entrepreneurs, serve consultants and coaches and people that are making the same journey that you've made, that I've made, I want you to talk about I want to dig into the personal side a little bit. What makes this important to you? Why is this something you really, because I know we've known each other for several years now, put a lot of effort and energy in this. Why is this important to you?
Well, if you think about how many hours per week, hours per year you put into your work and you develop expertise in a particular area, you should get paid what you're worth. You should be able to do what you do, more of what you love, and get paid what you're worth. And I think that is only fair.
Well, I agree, but I'm going to dig in a little bit more. In David's heart, why is this something he can do that he wants to do? What motivates you to do this thing? I mean, you could do lots of stuff. You could really focus on nonprofit consulting. That's big. I have a client who does nothing but create nonprofits, and there's tons of that going on. And so you could do a lot of other things. I'm just curious what makes you devote your time, attention, and love to this community of transitioning people to help them overcome their fears, to help them understand the steps to transitioning from a corporate structured setting to where they're sort of on the front lines themselves. And like, why is that important to David? I guess we're getting a little squishy territory, but that's okay.
No, that's okay. Because I think it's important because I am more satisfied having more control over my career destiny. I see other people struggle with the same issues. And if I can be helpful to them, I'd like to be able to do that.
I ask that question because, you know, as people, human beings, we seem to be wired physically to really be in love and service of each other. And we're happiest, you know, we feel best when we're about that. And we see examples of people chasing other kinds of rainbows, you know, and some misery that associates with that. And so I always like to ask, like, what is it that drives David's heart into this place? So thank you for sharing a little of that. And you can share more if you like. Where do you see this going in the next year? Like 2024 just got started 5 minutes ago. So where's David after going 2024, 2025? What's going on?
Growing the community, serving more corporate refugees. And, you know, one of the things that I see people struggle with, and you and I talked about this, and I think it was before we started recording the first segment, is having focus, discipline, and perseverance to see something through long enough to feel like you have created elements of success that you're satisfied with. It takes a lot of effort. And it is helpful to have a framework to do this. That is part of the framework of what we use in the Smashing the Plateau community. It's five basic steps. You know, we've talked a lot about the interaction among community members. That's one piece of it. You know, it starts off with being really clear on what's important to you in your life and setting some broad goals that will support your being able to focus on what's important to you and to create greater success around what's important to you. And then creating a plan that is concrete to work toward those goals. And then the whole implementation process is the interaction with other colleagues in a community setting so that you can iterate in a structured way week in and week out, because that's where the success really happens. Ideas, as we know as entrepreneurs, ideas are a dime a dozen, but implementation is priceless. And so I have found that the structure that I've always used in my own career has been helpful when other people start to tap into it. So doing this in a community setting where there's a basic framework that everybody can tap into while they're supporting one another is what helps people really blossom in their careers.
So I love that. Focus, discipline, and perseverance. In your experience, is that a difficult thing for corporate refugees, people that have been in place where someone else provided the salary structure, all that sort of thing? The business model, like you said, as an engineer, you didn't realize your company was falling apart until they dragged you in and said, "Hi, you're doing a great job. Get out of here." You know, that sort of thing. How is it? Is it difficult for people to learn focus, discipline, and perseverance?
I think it's hard for a lot of people to deploy these traits. And yes, I find that particularly when people leave the corporate structure where somebody else is setting the framework to the, quote unquote, the freedom of entrepreneurship, where freedom is kind of a misnomer because yes, you have the ultimate control over your time, but if you don't use your time wisely, you're not going to make any money. You need to realize that the more structured you are as an entrepreneur, the more you're likely to be successful. But the good news is you get to create the structure. But again, this focus, discipline, and perseverance comes along with trying to support a structure that is going to drive success, particularly financial success, if you're running a business and not a hobby.
I love that distinction, business and not a hobby. And it's so important. You know, people do stuff and they dabble in side hustles all the time and they think, gee, wouldn't it be nice to make money doing this thing I like over here? But they don't really understand the focus, discipline, and perseverance until suddenly it's what they need to do. And holy crap, I didn't know it was this hard, or I had to do all these 47 other things. I want to give you a chance to tell people everything about where to find you, about where to read. Like, I can't remember. Have you written a book or two?
No.
You haven't.
No book or two.
No book or two. No, would, not knowing that, I would invite you to consider that.
Thank you for the invitation. Yeah, I've written lots of other stuff.
You have.
Just not a book.
The journey you've described. Well, the journey you've described is book worthy, the learnings, the process. Anyway, a different topic. But I want you to tell people where to find you, how to follow you, how to get a hold of your podcasts, plural, your channels, whatever they are, so that there's no question about where people can find your expertise, join your support group, your community, or anything else. Where can we find all that?
SmashingThePlateau.com. That is the best place. You can connect with me on LinkedIn as well. The Smashing the Plateau is where we share everything. It's the best place to start.
Wonderful. Is there enough stuff there that someone can learn enough that they should feel really invited to join your community?
There is, and if you would like to have a discussion about what you're finding there, reach out to me via the contact information on our website. Send me a message on LinkedIn. We also have a free profitability checklist that goes through, in very short form, what this framework is that I described that can be helpful to accelerate your progress. That's available at smashingtheplateau.com/profitability checklist.
Well, that's fabulous. So smashingtheplateau.com, profitability checklist, follow on LinkedIn. So now I'm just going to open it to some, what didn't I ask that you wish that I would, or that you want to tell me, the listeners, about business, about focus, discipline, perseverance, about yourself, about your heart, anything that you didn't talk about that we ought to talk about? Tell me.
Yeah, I would add one thing, Kellen, which is when you're making the transition from corporate to your own business, if you are testing the waters and kind of dabbling in it, thinking that maybe you'll get this consulting or coaching thing to work, or maybe you'll go get another job. Entrepreneurship is hard work. Making money as an entrepreneur is hard work. If you really want to succeed as an entrepreneur, put your heart into it, put your mind into it, and devote as much time as you can in the early stages to get it off the ground and as successful as possible.
I love that, and the fact that you've acknowledged the truth that it takes a lot of work. You know, success isn't going to come in an Amazon box, and there isn't a foolproof checklist for anybody anywhere. You made a point of mentioning hundreds or even thousands of little pivots, and I referred to that for a minute. Talk a little bit about that, about the discouragement, about the needed energy, about the signs. Talk about this pivoting process and how you keep your chin up, your heart up, and keep going when the economy, whoever, who cares, throws these pivot points at you.
Right. So I think it's important to have one primary thing that you're focusing on each week that you believe is going to make a positive impact in your business. Because if you try to do too many, you'll be overwhelmed. If you're trying to do one new thing a week, that already is a lot. One new thing where you may not have all the skills to do it. You may have to learn something. You may have to reach out to a colleague, a friend, or whatever. So don't try to do too much too fast. Second thing is, every single day, speaking to your point, Kellen, about discouragement and life throwing you curveballs, I think it's really important to have as positive a mindset as possible. So get your mind in good shape, in the right framework at the beginning of the day. It could be helpful to have a buddy that you check in with every day, where you can keep each other in a positive framework, particularly when stuff happens that's unexpected that could derail your efforts. Then you have somebody you can reach out to really quickly and say, listen, this just happened. Let's talk about it. Yeah, so positive frame of mind, doing something physical to get your energy up as early in the day as possible is important. I find meditation can be helpful, setting your mind in the right framework. And then having some kind of check-in with, and this is part of the framework I believe is really helpful with the pivots, is once a week, have a place where you go, whether it's with one person, a small group, a community, where you report on what the progress you've made on your plan in the past week, what's worked well, what hasn't worked so well, where do you think feedback would be most helpful? Ask for the feedback, listen to it, take some notes. And whatever your plan was before you had this encounter, whatever your plan was for the following week, based on what you have now heard from others, make a little pivot in your plan. And then the following week, do the same thing. Report on what you've done. Get some feedback. Make a tiny pivot in your plan. Do it again the following week, right? And if you make, even if you make a 10th of a percent improvement in your business every single week, multiply that by 52. See where you are at the end of the year.
I love it. And I really appreciate that. Creating yourself in the morning, having things that help you, whether it's meditation or check-ins, a coaching or accountability framework, all of those things certainly are consistent with my experience. David, despite our technical interruption, I am grateful to have had you today on the show to share your decades of experience, your own pivots, the things that you're creating for people. I encourage you to keep on going. I love talking to you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Kellen.
You're certainly welcome. Listeners, I want to give you one more piece of encouragement. Check David out. He's the real deal. He's had the experience. His heart is sincere, and he's a real helpful voice and a powerful person. And I know if you are in your journey of creating more for yourself, his community, his advice and things we've talked about on this episode will help you create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.